Hello and welcome to the Golf Lovers United podcast. I am Golf Lover UK with a slightly burnt, but less ridiculous back of the head than a few days ago. Jay, I know you did laugh at the sunburn on the back of my head when I sent you the photo. You've never suffered that, have you?
No, it's not a problem that I have. If you have a certain amount of melanin, it's less of an issue. But that being said, my dad, who plays golf in Florida a lot, he has suffered from that. So everybody needs to apply a proper amount of sunblock every X amount of hours. I don't even remember how long you're supposed to put it on for. But yeah, it's definitely something I would recommend to everybody.
And it's just so annoying because I've not burnt my head maybe in 15, 20 years as a bald guy. Just, it doesn't happen. I go and I always put cream on neck and head, but look, I didn't do it. I thankfully got away with it. If it had been middle of May, not the end of April, I think I might have been a bit more burnt, but hey, I got away with it. Right, everybody, that is your health. Baz Luhrmann, everybody should wear sunscreen. That is our that's our cultural drop for today. We don't do a lot of cultural drops. A nice quick podcast today. We want to talk about a little bit Scotty. Again, just dominant, just in the way that he's done. I want to talk about some of that. I know you want to talk about, is anyone going to stand up and try and compete?
Yeah.
That's a big one. Avenue you're coming from.
For sure.
And I think we'll also talk about, I want to cover a little bit on the Asian Tour, just 2-3 minutes. Great to see Wade Ormsby with an absolute phenomenal final round of 7-under to take second place. John Catlin, maybe the most informed golfer on the Asian Tour.
Yeah, really well.
And then let's talk about Liv Adelaide. Let's have a look at that. We're not going to make any official picks, just give our thoughts on some of the things going on. And that'll be it for today. One thing I would like to just address very quickly. We've had, I'm going to guess, 35, 40 people reach out saying, you only did 3 minutes in the Future of Golf. Can you do a longer episode? Well, we've done a load of Future of Golf episodes. We've done a lot of that, but it did seem to pique interest. And I think, sure, Jay, the feedback I was getting both on your bit and my bit was, I think people feel we're further down the line. So rather than it just being wild conjecture, which for us it never was, it was the result of conversations and sources and this, that, and the other. I think people are now more going, okay, well, wild conjecture feels less wild because we've moved down the road a little bit. So we will do an episode on that, won't we?
I completely agree. Like, I know the solo podcast that I did back in, I guess it was the end of the year, that was where I kind of tapped into what I thought the grand
Christmas episode.
That's what I thought the grand scheme of professional golf was going to be. Like, we are kind of headed in that direction. I'm not going to lie. Like, I talked about this sort of global series of events. It's definitely the where things seem to be headed. And this has taken so many twists and turns since then, because that was the original plan that basically a couple months later got completely scrapped based off of a bunch of other stuff that was going on. We knew there were a couple barriers that needed to be removed in order for that to progress. Those barriers have now been removed. So that's how things can change. So it's like you can make a prediction, but it's based off of the information that you have at that particular time. Then as you accumulate more information, you have to evolve with the times, knowing what the North Star actually is. And I would suggest all the listeners to go back and listen to that episode, because I kind of tapped into a lot of the stuff that's going on now. And it's a lot of the stuff that we're going to be talking about too.
And understanding payoffs, like a few people said, there's no way Liv are going to get any ranking points. Now, I understand there's the Liv haters want to say that. But if Yazir and Piff are going to fund, the PIF are going to fund or partly fund or seed quite a lot of money into like a world umbrella tour that was the avenue I was going down. I know you don't disagree, but let's just look at that one saying about. There is no way Yazir is going to say, hey guys, here's 500 million or a billion for a 5-year tour, but I'm not going to get anything else in return. And that's why I didn't say Liv are going to get ranking points for every event. I've said, and I believe, and I know you're in a similar vein, the Liv will probably have 6 events that are singles only that will get ranking points. Whether it works exactly like that, that's kind of we've got a slight difference, but it being that concept. Yeah. you're not going to put a billion, what they call it, they're not going to put the billy down and not get something right. in return. So that's what we understand. Until it's known, it's not known, like the Rory rumors. No one's gone right. until they're gone. But equally, you've got to take a little bit of what do we know? What is common sense? How does business work? I think when you've had three Liv players now, three prominent Liv players, including Phil, who's in that inner circle, say, yeah, we will have a few events go to 72. When Phil Mickelson says a few events go to 72, take that to the bank. And I believe it'll be six events going to 72 because those 72 will then have ranking points. Look, let's not do it now, but that's people have got to understand. You and I've got knowledge and experience and sources, and we're just drawing on that and also some conjecture around how things might work.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem is that like a lot of these folks just listen, and this has been my number one gripe from the beginning, is that everybody's just listened to the general theme that the golf media has been putting out for the last 2 years. And it's like, how often has that been proven wrong? Like they've all been saying, oh, Liv is never going to get world ranking points. And that's just like, that's totally ignoring what could change in like the next, you know, few months to a year's time. Like that's what, there was always going to be a quid pro quo to this. And the thing is, Piff and Yasser have known this from the beginning. Like this isn't, I don't think anything that's happened has been necessarily a surprise. I think that everything that's, happened to this point has been fairly predictable. I mean, Phil even said it in his, press conference in Miami. So I think that, everything is sort of playing out pretty much according to plan here. So, like I said, by 2026, we're going to be living in a much, much better golf world. If we had stopped the shenanigans the last 2-3 years, we'd already be in that better golf world. But no, this is just how the establishment rolls. Like they are not, they don't give up power easily. And unfortunately for them, it's great for me because I really dislike the establishment of golf in the United States for a myriad of reasons that I talk about on Twitter all the time. So I definitely think that, you know, things are moving in the right direction, and we'll have to see how the next couple months play out. But it definitely seems like we're going to get some movement here very, very soon.
Well, let's move on now to the RBC Heritage.
Do we have to?
We do. Yeah. We're a golf podcast. So yeah, we do. We talked a lot about Scottie Scheffler. And quite rightly, because he is, without doubt, the best player in the world. Inarguable. He's the best player in the world. There are others that are close, and maybe closer than they should be because of ranking. I don't really care about that at the minute. But he's inarguably the best player in the world. As our good friend Claude Harmon said, he's making golf look so easy. And that's I remember when I compared to the Vijay Singh 2004. Yeah. As many people know, listen to this, I was a very casual golf fan at that stage. I wasn't an obsessive. But Vijay, along with Ernie Els, were two of the people that got me to go to the screen and watch. And you look back at some of that 2004 Vijay Singh, and he just made golf look super simple. And I'm not a big remember of Duval.
That's where I was going to go.
Some people have said that actually Duval did that in that couple of years that he did.
Very
that.
Striking.
So, yeah. So let's look at Scotty, and again, I know people get quite inflamed when you say he's not a superstar. I don't want to go down that conversation again. All you're saying is he's not MJ regarding off the course and other things, and he just doesn't bring the lights and everything. And it's actually noticeable that a few other people are saying it.
Oh,
and I actually saw a couple of more mainstream traditionals saying it the other day that, my God, he's on an absolute tear. When Tiger was on a tear, he brought everybody in. Scotty's on the tear and people are going, okay. And that's not Scotty's fault. Scotty's a good bloke. He's a man of God. He's a great, seems like a great husband. I imagine he's going to be a great father. He's a kind person, but he's just that. Yeah. He's just like very vanilla in his personality just to play golf. He's just a nice guy.
The comparison that I made a while ago, and this is something my brother told me Charles Barkley literally just talked about earlier this week, was I compare Scottie Scheffler to Nikola Jokic in the NBA now, because Jokic he's a multiple MVP. He's the best player on the best team right now. Like the
by a long way.
Probably going to win the championship again this year, except – Look,
yeah, but Boston are gonna vomit everywhere as always. So, but all to the Celtics fans, you know, you probably won't even get to the championship game. You know, you're gonna do something wrong.
The funny thing is, everybody knows how much I hate Boston. I am rooting for the Celtics only because Jason Tatum's my guy. He's a Duke. He's a fellow Duke guy. He's a member of the Brotherhood. Rooting for him. However, Jokic is a great comparison because look, NBA ratings. Stories are out there. NBA ratings in the regular season have been down this year. And when your best player isn't necessarily, he doesn't necessarily have that star quality, it's like that's shown in how many people are interested. That's just reality. So people can get mad at me about saying that, but I'm just telling you how it is because I've studied all sports for a very, very long time. Like I know how these things go. It just is what it is. So if people need to take out that frustration on me, I can handle it. Like there's nothing you can people out there can say to me that like I can't handle. So
actually, you look at the Denver Nuggets and the whole team's a bit Scottie Scheffler, like Jamal Murray and Michael Porter. Like none of them are what you. I've been a bit harsh on Jamal Murray, but you know what I mean. They're not. None of them are like absolute shoot the lights out superstars. They're just bloody good at their job. Head down and get on with it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just how it is. And some sports kind of go through these periods of time. And, you know, even when like the guy that I was comparing Scottie Scheffler to in golf, the run that David Duval went on in the late 90s, where he basically he won everything for like 2 years. He was kind of like that. That was when Tiger was kind of he was in the middle of like a huge swing change, like Tiger's decline resulted in David Duval's incline. And I think that was a really interesting time in golf where they were trying to ride that Tiger wave. And thank goodness Tiger came back and had one of the great seasons of all time in 2000. But and David Duval, we thought that we were going to have that rivalry with those two and Phil Mickelson for 10, 15, 20 years. And we got David Duval for basically four. Nothing. Yeah.
Look, let's not do too much more on basketball because the English and the European listeners, well, some European, but mainly the English will just be bored to death. Look, Scotty's phenomenal. He's on an absolute tear. He is the best golfer in the world.
You don't have to keep saying
my,
that.
In my, you know. But he is. But he's not bringing the star quality. Yeah. And I think since we did our last podcast, more ratings have come out comparing what I'm going to refer to, and please take us a pinch of salt, listeners, Bryson's Thursday. And the Thursday the year before, the year before, the year before. Bryson's Thursday dragged people to the TV.
Yeah.
That was that star quality, that different way of doing it. The Bryson and Scotty Friday, where Bryson was still there or thereabouts, and Morikawa had a good day, Homer had a good day. That dragged people 100%. To the TV. The second Bryson dropped off,
yeah,
the figures went. Look, let's just now talk. I want to talk about, look, we looked down that list, and I think there's a huge star issue in general. And we talked about maybe it's the personality issue. And I don't want to talk about it in detail. What I want to talk about is the thing that you've got, which is, with a real Slim Shady, please stand up. Is anybody, there was a golf journalist said it, like, are the other, they didn't quite say it like this, so I'll take their words and reform it. Did no one else have enough about him to go, this guy's arrived late on a Tuesday night, played 9 holes on the Wednesday, having won the Masters, all the emotion, about to be a dad, gone home to his wife, got another green jacket. Didn't do great on Thursday, just shot 2 under, and then went, oh, actually, I'll just win this Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Like, is it that no one else is standing up, or is it just golf at the minute?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, no, that's where I feel like there's definitely golfers that like have to stand up. Like, I hear so much praise of Scottie Scheffler in the press from players on the PGA Tour, and I get it. Like, they want to continue to push their, you know, product, and unfortunately for them, Scottie Scheffler is basically their entire product at this point. Except where's like Rory been? Like, where's Wyndham Clark is up there pretty frequently, but it's like, is he Scottie's like number one challenger now? Like, where's Xander? Where's Victor Hovland? Like, where's Max Homa? Like, all these guys. Colin Morikawa seems like he's like starting to get his game back and like elevate, but like the final round, his final rounds, when he's been in contention recently have not been good. So I think these guys are starting to feel pressure, and I think that's starting to impact their games, unfortunately. So, yeah, we'll have to see.
Wyndham Clark has been a fantastic counterfoil for the regular season. Obviously, he made the 54 comment at the Masters and then missed the cut. Choking, let's be honest, choking and coming out. Well, I did think the 54 comment was ironic, considering when he won at Pebble Beach, he played 54 holes. Sometimes a sense of occasion and a sense of perspective is needed with these comments. But yeah, Wyndham Clark, full credit to him, he's been knocking on the door every time Scotty's won. He's been knocking on the door. And that seems to be the only one. And Heath has done okay. We saw Justin Thomas has challenged this time. But Justin Thomas, JT hasn't challenged at all, really, has he? So it does seem to be a list of players who are great not playing well, and interesting to see really what happens in the next 3 to 4 events, because let's look at the schedule. There's 3 PGA Tour events, of which very few will be playing this week at the Zurich Classic. So there's 3 big PGA Tour events, 3 biggish PGA Tour events left for the PGA Championship. These players are going to probably play in 2 of them.
Maybe.
Not
Scotty Scheffler may not play in any based off of, you know, the status of his wife's pregnancy. Like, she's basically due. And
I would be surprised if he does play in any of them. I'd be surprised. He's not playing in the Zurich Classic. She's due this week or next week. I'd be very surprised if he plays in any of them before the PGA Championship. So are we in agreement? Scotty, I know you hate me saying it, is the best player in the world. But is anyone else going to stand up? Is anyone else going to be Duval? Anyone else going to be Phil? Anyone else going to be whoever to challenge Ernie Els, Vijay? Because actually, this is what makes... My quick rant. This is what makes Tiger so bloody incredible. It's because when Tiger did it, he had Duval banging on the door. He had Phil banging on the door. He had Vijay banging on the door. He had Ernie Els banging the door. He had Padraig for a couple of years banging on the door with majors. Like, he had some real big names going at him, and he was still dominant. That's what you look at Scotty now, and Scotty's dominated for 18 months in many ways on the PGA Tour for sure, right? And all he had was the tail end of John Rahm before John went across. And really, outside of Victor had a tiny run, but it was a short stint of a run. Victor got hot for a couple of events. It's really been Scotty with a couple of people being there a bit.
No, I completely agree. 2 quick points that I want to make. Number one, part of the reason why I don't want to get too high on Scotty Scheffler is because people take this stuff, and now they're trying to say he's going to win the Grand Slam, which is just completely crazy and nonsensical to me, which is part of the reason why, again, I've got to knock him down a few notches. Like, yeah, he's had a good stretch. It's one thing to maintain this stretch for like a few months. It's another to maintain it for a full season. Like, it's not going to happen. So he's got too many life changes coming up. It's not going to happen. I want everybody get that through their heads.
It's also really hard to do it.
Extremely.
Like, people are talking about him winning the Grand Slam. As if Scotty turns up, he'll win it. Like,
it's stupid.
Scotty is not, he's got to try and win an Open. Yeah. Like, I would argue he can, do you know what? If he gets enough sleep, he'll probably win the PGA Championship, because where they're going, they're going to Valhalla, and the way that course is going to be set up, that course is a tight course. Its defense is don't get in the rough. Valhalla's defense is do not go offline. Well, Scotty Scheffler's bloody good at hitting the ball a long way and hitting it straight. So if you said to me, is he going to win the Grand Slam? My answer is he'll look like it, because I think he probably wins at Valhalla or his first one or two if he gets enough sleep, because the course just sets up perfectly for him. But then he's got to go to very, very, very different places. Pinehurst is not what you would call a normal golf course in many ways for playing the way they do. You've got to have a lot of craft, a lot of, like, who's going to use a wedge? Like, one of Scotty's biggest defenses is that he's an incredible short game wedge player. One of the first thing the caddies tell you to do at Pinehurst is put the wedge away. If you can putt it. And then he's got to go to Troon. And that's going to be a challenge in itself. So look, I think he'll probably win 2 majors this year, which is a big statement to make about any golfer in the world. I think he would probably win 2.
If he wins 2, that is like an all-time season. Like, that would be amazing. It would be like on the level of a Mark O'Meara. Like, that's an incredible, incredible historic year. I just need people to pump the brakes a little bit. So that's all.
Right, let's just very quickly touch on the Asian Tour. Saudi Open, presented by the PIF. That was at Riyadh Golf Club. Now, Wade Ormsby, friend of the show. We get on really well with Wade. If I describe Wade as, he is one of life's good guys. Like, he's a really, beyond a nice person, like, really supportive, always been very, very kind to me. Of late, when I've got to know him a bit, he's just a really good bloke and got a fantastic moustache. But Wade had an absolute phenomenal final day. He shot 700 in the final round to jump up from sort of 10th, 11th into second place. And good to see that. But John Catlin on the Asian Tour, Christ alive. John, having had a couple of not great seasons, he's ahead in points. He's the Scotty of the PGA Tour, isn't he? He's just like so far ahead. He's doing so well. And between John Catlin and David Pughes, they're winning every single event on the Asian Tour.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see. And I love Wade Ormsby. Just to follow up on that point, he was also my pro-am partner in Tucson in addition to Paul Casey. And that's obviously the event that we won. Shout out to him. That might be one of the last times I've ever mentioned that. But Catlin's been playing great, and he's been one
of... It won't be.
No, I'll probably be mentioning this until the day I die. But
also, it only took you 10 minutes, 32 seconds to mention you went to Duke.
Look, it's all relevant. So these things are everywhere. So, you know, you're going to have to get used to it. Catlin, he's been like on another level, but he's been in this weird sort of in between place where he's like kind of stuck in between the European Tour and the Asian Tour. Like, he's allowed to play in these Asian Tour events as long as there isn't a conflicting European Tour event, which is why he played in the Saudi Open. He also played in the event, I think it was in Macau, that he won. Like, those weren't conflicting events. I think his season's going to be really interesting. I want to see if he is getting into more European Tour events. Is he going to play in those, or is he going to stay on the Asian Tour? I think he's going to stay on the Asian Tour now because he's already leading the Order of Merit. And we all know if you win the Order of Merit, you will automatically have a golden ticket to LIV Golf next year.
And not only is he winning the Order of Merit, if you look at the players high up in the Order of Merit, three of the five are LIV players who, A, can't qualify to be on LIV unless they lose their place. So it might be, but there doesn't appear to be any LIV players high up in the Order of Merit that are likely to drop out and need the golden ticket. But also, they're going to miss 1, 2, 3, 4. They're going to miss at least 6 of the next 12 events just with calendar clashes. So even if they attended the other 6, and they all won't, he's really, it's him versus a couple of others on that Order of Merit. And we'll bring you some more Asian Tour details later, but let's get on to LIV, because you've got to go, I've got to go. And I'm going to start at the bottom and just talk a little bit about, we've got a couple of guys in LIV that, look, I've got some mates in LIV, we know that. We've got a few players who need to really recapture some form and find some form. So let's just touch on AK to start with. The AK journey's different. He's got a lot of mileage and a lot of goodwill with the fans. He's posting videos of him grinding, videos of him playing, videos of him practicing, doing it on his own, doing it with a coach, whatever else it might be. AK's grinding, and like, he's got the goodwill of all the fans. And if he ends up this season DFL, I don't think anyone's going to go, oh, well, get rid of him. It might be that he doesn't stay, but I think that AK's got enough goodwill and brings enough with regards to the overall scheme of LIV that seeing him there has been a good thing. And I know there are many skeptics at the start who actually now like him being there because he's being very honest and very frank about it, and I like that. Look, let's put the names out there. Hudson Swafford, Lee Westwood, Jaco Kazuma, I can't say his name, but Kazuma, Mito Pereira, Andrew Ogletree, and Danny Lee, Kylie Samoya. They're all on 0 points.
It's not good.
They're all on 0 points. And there are some more just above it who aren't on zero, but let's look at the zeros at the minute. Now, Danny Lee has, and Kazuma, it's his first year on LIV. He's a young boy. Let's give him a little bit of slack, but he hasn't had a finish above 31st. Right. I think we need more from Lee. Hudson Swafford is playing for me. It feels like he knows he's playing out his last year on LIV. He knows he's just there, just trying to grind, find some form, earn some money, and hopefully go and maybe join the Asian tour next year, or maybe goes back to the Corn Ferry tour. Who knows? But Hudson Swafford is not going to have a career on LIV next year. And I just want, that's a shame because Hudson's a very nice person. Oh yeah.
And he's a very good player too. The problem is when you come back from these major injuries and surgeries, you don't know what it's going to be like. Like, I think that he's a multiple time winner on the PGA Tour. So it's not like he's not an accomplished player. He certainly is. Like when he came over to LIV, he was a top 50 player. So it's not like he's not any good. Like, I just think he hasn't found his form ever since he had a hip injury and had major surgery on his hip. So I don't know if he's going to make it back to all full form this year. I think when they talk about players, earning a path back to the PGA Tour, I think they're really talking more about the Hudson Swaffords of the world rather than like some of the top guys that are basically never going to leave. Those guys need to have a path back if they get relegated, because I mean, forcing a guy like Hudson Swafford to like play on the Asian Tour probably is not the way to go. Like he'd probably prefer to play on the Corn Ferry Tour, to be honest with you. It's less travel. It's more local.
You know that Hudson would get the International Series starts and the Asian Tour starts. So it'd be an okay year. It wouldn't be a problem, but yeah, I get that. And the one thing that, again, like people sometimes say that I carry water for LIV, and I really don't, because like one of the things that makes me a little bit cross, and just be honest about it, is I know Laurie missed that. He had two putts from 48 feet to win his way onto LIV full time, and he didn't make it. He three putted and then lost. Like, we understand that, but also Laurie's 36th in the standings, having played only two of five events.
He's finished top 24 both times.
Yeah, Hudson deserves his chance. Hudson's on a contract. I get that. But Laurie finished tied 15th and tied 21st. Yeah. And I just, Laurie is a lot better than some of the other guys on the tour at the minute. And I think one of the weaknesses I've said, and I know people have got to have their teams, but I've said for a while, it just feels like we could have two or three players just playing and be subbed in and out. Because if you are, if you're Kevin Na, you might want to swap out Danny Lee for Laurie Kanter. I'm not saying that I should. I'm just saying it feels shame to me to have someone as good as Laurie, who's played really well, who's 36th. Like,
if someone is struggling
and only played two,
I think that's what these transfer windows that are coming up are going to be about. Like, if there's someone that like isn't performing the way that they need to, there needs to be like something mid-season says, hey, thank you for your service. You could certainly earn your way back, but unfortunately, like, you're just not playing up to expectations, and we got to swap you out for somebody else. Like, that's something that absolutely needs to happen. Like, I think that the bottom part of LIV, and I was talking to a few people about this the other day, like, the relegation stuff is really, really interesting. We actually did a Twitter Spaces on it last week. The relegation stuff is going to be really, really interesting this year because – no, the bottom six players, and basically all those players that you mentioned that don't have any points, pretty much none of them are under contract for next year, except for Lee Westwood, who, like, there may be something Lee does where he moves to the front office.
It's just Lee. Yeah. It's
I know Connor's close. Connor's like, I think he's 46, but yeah, so
he's 46. Yeah. He's 46, but he doesn't have a contract for next year.
Yeah, because he's a non-equity. Right.
He's a non-equity captain. Sure. So Kieran Vincent he's won his place. He's got 1 year. Eugenio's at 44, but Eugenio's had a turn in form and playing well on the Asian tour. You'd think Eugenio will be.
Yeah, by the time he gets to Valderrama in UK.
And then it's up to people if they want to retain them then, isn't it? When they're in that middle bracket, if they want to retain them. But yeah, there's a few that I think is going to struggle. Now look, we've done enough negative. I'll tell you negative, right? And just bear with me. One of the greatest things I've ever done, content-wise, is my interview with Bubba Watson.
It was great.
And it's got like no views. It's got like 280 yeah. views. Like, I sometimes don't understand. Like, what have I got to, like, the one guy wrote to me and wrote to me properly and said, this is one of the best interviews yeah. I've ever seen. Thank you so much for doing it. A couple of people said that publicly. But, like, I think sometimes, Jay, what have we got to do? Like, we get a two-time major winner who opens up about yeah. everything. I can't get a bloody view on it, but there we are. That's I'm not moaning. I'm just saying, we, like, we can't.
Look, there's a certain algorithm that we have to follow. I understand that, but it's like we can't way too many podcasts, way too many other channels. The corporate media are always chasing clicks. That content that you did with Bubba Watson is going to stand the test of time. So it may have a slow start. And honestly, it probably got swept up in the algorithm because that same day I posted the Q&A that I did with Phil and John Rahm, and that's got like 9,000 views. So that's why, like,
and it was the Masters yeah, exactly. and all that. It's one of the best things we've ever done. Arguably, definitely the best thing yeah. I've ever done. And it's lounging at about nine likes. But there we are. It was just more because I saw Bubba in the list. Now, David Pugh's having a good season on the Asian yep. tour, being there or thereabouts to live, going to the mid-table.
He's close to getting in the top
100. Been having a good season.
Pugh is very close to getting in the top 100 for the PGA Championship. He's at like 104, yeah. 105 now. If he had won the Saudi Open, he would have been in the top 100. I think he's got one more event in order to get to the cutoff. So I think he may get into the PGA Championship. We'll have to see how that plays out. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's fine. And then plays like Caleb Surratt, who like I think Caleb's incredible. Two fantastic finishes straight up, and then a little dip, but then back to fantastic finish a couple of weeks ago. And then we're then coming into some of the beginnings. Again, let's shout out to Blandy. Blandomaniacs, whatever they want to call themselves. Blandomonium. Like, age 75 and 27. kill me if he is that. Age 75 and 22nd in the standings. 11th, 15th, 31st, 8th, and 14th. Like, the guy is literally the Benjamin
Button. He's out there grinding. Like, I see him, like... every live event that I go to, he's always on the putting green, always on the driving range. Like, he is constantly working, and like, he's able to maintain this status because he wants to do this for as long as he can. And he knows that if his game falls off, like, he's going to be gone. So, I think this is a great time for him to keep.
He's made family generational money. And if he gets one more year, then it's just going to be unbelievable. Yep. And I think then he might go and play senior tour after that. Who knows? And then we're then into Schwartzel, Maronk, Schwartzel, Uline, Hatton, Howell, Smith, Wolf, Gooch, and the rest. Now, a couple of people said to me, who do I think is going to win this week? And I think it'd be very easy to go Neiman, Rahm, Burmeister. But actually, I think I'm gonna go a little bit different. I'm going to go for Anser, Bryson, and Paul Casey. Mm-hmm. Just my sort of three, I feel. Casey's been Mr. Consistent, 11th, 5th, 29th, a little bit inconsistent. Mm-hmm. Killed myself in my own comment there. 2nd and 14th. But outside that 29th, which isn't dreadful, it's 11th, 5th, 2nd mm-hmm. and 14th. He's been so, so good there. And Anser has been proper trending, 28, 21, 12, 1st and 8th. It's... I think Anser's got a great shot. And also, Anser didn't play at the Masters. He's had time off, this, that, and the other.
I can see him.
What are your thoughts, not on my three, but your thoughts on the three players you think might be a factor?
No, I think...
Oh, Bryson.
Bryson's going to be there pretty much every... That being said, I think that one name, he won this event last year, nobody's really talking about him, is Taylor Gooch. Like, Taylor Gooch is still... He's been maintaining his form this year. Like, yeah, he hasn't won, but he's got a second place finish. He's finished top 10 a couple other times. Like, I think Taylor Gooch, he really loves this course. It's very, very clear. He shot 62, 63 last year. Like, I think that says something about like how much he likes this particular course. I could certainly see Taylor Gooch winning this. I could see Cam Smith winning. Cam Smith played great last year. He played great in the Masters. Like, he finished top 10. I think he's been having a decent year. Like, he finished Second in Hong Kong, I think Cam Smith is 100% gonna have a good event. And I think sort of looking down the standings, like some of the big names, like I expect them to have a good week. Like I expect Phil to have a good week. I expect someone like Brooks Koepka to have a good week. Like Brooks has not had good form almost at all this year, but and that was something I was concerned about going into the Masters. And look, when he shot back-to-back 77s, I basically was backtracking all of my Brooks Koepka picks for the Masters. Like I just didn't think it was going to happen, but yeah, like those guys are the ones that I think are going to play well. You look at some of the guys who played well last year too. Patrick Reed is another one. Patrick Reed, for him to not have won a live event yet is just crazy to me. So eventually Patrick Reed is going to win.
And I think the other person that maybe doesn't get enough recognition, because 8th, 12th, 15th, 21st, 4th, that's incredible. Joe Ratton. He's come to live and just been great straight away. So I think what's going to happen, and I've said this, is when it goes from 54 to 60, the separation is going to get bigger because there's just going to be more players in there knocking people down and changing the points. And I just think that, like, if you're consistently 8th, 12th, 15th, 21st, 4th out of a 60-man roster than a 54-man roster, you get a little bit of a bit more separation in the field. So Tyrrell's been fantastic.
The other thing with Tyrrell Hatton too, like this is something that I've talked about a little bit, but like it's gone way underreported that like some of these guys, they feed off of the negativity. Like when they came to live, like a lot of these guys got a lot of negativity. Some of them negatively impacted their games. Like Bryson is a perfect example. Bryson was not playing well, didn't play well for like a full year on live. Then he started to finally figure it out and, like, you know, obviously started winning events. He shot 58, all that stuff. Except the guy like Brooks feeds off of that negativity. And it's part of the reason why he won the PGA, and he was like one of the best players on LIV last year. So I think that, and other players like Cam Smith, that just kind of rolls off his back. Like he doesn't care. Tyrrell Hatton's one of those guys that I don't think the negativity actually makes him play better. So and some of the other guys like Rahm, I don't he's been playing fine, but it's like I don't know, maybe some of that negativity is like impacting his game a little bit, which is the reason why he hasn't won yet. Except that's going to change, and like I said, by the time we get to Valderrama, he's going to be a locomotive and he's probably going to win multiple live events this year. It just wasn't going to happen early.
Well, I feel we covered that very well. If I do say so myself, we are an excellent pair of podcasters. Oh, I love the fact that people don't know why we can't agree on everything, and then they think that's bizarre. I find that more and more on Twitter. I don't want to get into it, but it's so odd, isn't it?
Because virtually every other golf podcast that's out there is an echo chamber. They agree on everything. So, and they think that that's the only way.
It'd be boring if we agreed on everything.
Which is why some of those podcasts I don't listen to anymore, because it's like when you feel like you already know what they're going to say, like it gets to the point where like, okay, like I know that you're going to be negative about Liv and positive about the PGA Tour. Me, I do want to get out there. Like, RBC Heritage, people were surprised that I was like, oh yeah, this is one of my top five events on the PGA Tour. Like, I love RBC Heritage. I love Harbortown. It's one of my favorite courses.
What course size.
It's a great course. It's a great course. I just wish it had more of the more players that I root for would be great, because there were virtually none of the event. Even Hoblin took the week off. So it was definitely a tough one, but you know, I like it. So, you know,
Well, let's just do teams very quickly. Yeah. I could say something about podcasts. So teams, how you look past the crushes, I just don't know. Just that, like you've said it so many times, have you got four people that can all play golf? And if you have, it's going to go pretty well. And that's kind of the thing we're seeing with the crushes. That I'm not saying Legion don't have four. I'm not saying Torquay don't have four. But both Torquay and Legion have got a player in Mito Pereira and Kieran Vincent who are ranked in the 40s. And then come that fourth round, unless they have a good round in the fourth round, that can drag them down. Whereas the crushes' lowest ranked player is... Anirban Lahiri at 27th. So he's if your worst player is 27th, and I think he's the highest ranked. Oh, no, actually, the highest ranked worst player is Graham McDowell at 21st. So Smash should be there or thereabouts, but I think they've not always fired at the same time. But can you look past the Crushers at all? Or
no, Crushers should definitely be the favorites pretty much every time, except like I said, I've been picking Torquay every week because I'm a believer that like some of these guys are going to turn around. Like Mito Pereira is way too talented to be playing as poorly as he's been playing. So I think Mito's going to turn around at some point. And if he turns it around, I think Torquay is probably going to win soon. If not Adelaide, I think they're certainly going to win one of the next three events. A lot of this falls on him. I think Waco's been playing great. Obviously, Munoz has been pretty much giving you what you would expect. And then Puig is, you know, a little bit up and down, but he obviously has shown that he's a
Ortiz, you mean?
Yeah, that's what oh.
Because Puig right, on the finals, yeah.
Good point. I was looking at the roster last year, sorry. So Ortiz has been playing, you know, decent, but it's like Mito has not been good. Like Mito's been terrible. So he needs to figure out if he gets it sorted out, like they'll be fine. But we're just not sure what we're gonna get. I'm a believer though, which is why I think Torquay is gonna be right there. And the Four Aces won this last year. I know DJ's not playing all that well, but like I said, Patrick Reed is going to be there. I think Harold Varner is going to play well, and Pat Perez, as long as he stays
in the middle. P loves this event.
Yes. Yeah. They're all people forget Pat Perez finished. He was in the final group with Taylor Gooch last year. So Pat Perez was playing playing great. I think he finished like fifth or sixth. So, I mean, he can be a little bit hot and cold. I think this event is perfect for Pat Perez. I think he's going to elevate. So I like the Aces. I like Torquay and I like the Crushers. Those are kind of the top three.
Yeah, I'm looking at Crushers and Range Goats. Matty Wolf's been brilliant. Bubba's been a great fourth player. His floor has come right back up. Peter's new line have been playing good golf. So yeah, I'm a fan of the Goats and the Fireballs. If you want to look at what the opposite of dovetailing looks like, that is what the Fireballs look like. They are not playing to get well together at the same time. You have two guys playing really well in one event and two not. And they're not getting the finishes they should do. Right, very quickly, we've got to close this off because I've got to leave in 3 minutes.
So do I.
I'm going to say podcasts that I listen to that I really love. There's a couple of podcasts I listen to. I really enjoy the Hack Out podcast. I listen to that and I really love... they do a little segment every Saturday morning on a golf stat, which Lou Stagner brings in a golf stat and says, a scratch player and a 15 handicap player from 100 yards, what's the percentage of time or what's their distance from the pit, whatever it might be, like how many shots to hole out, how many far are they from the pin, what percentage of balls they put within 20 up, all these different stats. And I love it. I love that. My favorite podcast in the minute is actually Claude's. Yes. So I used to listen a bit to Claude's podcast, in and out, dipping in and out, but obviously having got to meet him and spent time with him, I've been listening to it more. The Club Fitting 101 podcast he did on the 14th of February. If you've got any interest in club fitting and understanding club dynamics and shaft dynamics, go and listen to that podcast. Club Fitting 101, it's called. Son of a Butch with Claude Harmon. It is one of the best podcasts I've ever listened to for game improvement on gear, not technique, and this just on gear. And it's him and a guy from True Spec, Jordan Patrick. I just looked at it. It's a fantastic podcast and one of the best I've ever heard for helping you understand what goes into club fitting, what you should have in the bag, how you should think about the clubs you have in the bag. So just a shout out to another podcast.
Yeah, Claude's great. I wish I could say the same about Hack It Out. Lou Stagner and I have it out on Twitter all the time. Like he's way too much of a slave to his data, and he needs me to he needs somebody on that podcast to check him on his stats, because look, I'm a stats guy.
I like him. I like his stats.
You can like him.
I think you're hard on him. You can like him,
but it's like he is a slave to his data. There's no getting around it, and he needs more pushback on his stats. Like, yes, this is what the stats say, but what about X, Y, and Z? That's what that's why he gets pissed off at me, because I challenge him on everything he says. So maybe not everything, but like a lot of things. And yeah, I'll leave it at that. But yeah.
And we will close on another Colin Cowherd quote. Sometimes it's not about analytics. Sometimes it's about manalytics. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to us today. Hope you have a fantastic rest of the week. Enjoy Live Adelaide. I will get up each morning at 7 with Annabelle, and we'll have around about 11 holes to watch, which is perfect to watch during breakfast. So that'll be fantastic. I will not be getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch balls in the air. That is not the way I'll be doing it. So ladies and gentlemen, you take care. Jay, love you, brother. Speak to you as always. I'll probably text you in about 10 minutes. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.